Thank you. You may be seated. This is the time set for oral argument in our case number 1CASA 250170, Department of Child Safety versus Melissa W., Jason W., and E.W. Preliminary, we apologize for our late start. Each side will have 20 minutes for argument. These proceedings are being audio and video recorded, so we would appreciate it if you would identify yourself and your client at the start. It makes it easier for people who are listening to an audio recording. We have read the petition, the response. Hopefully we're up to speed on the facts, and we had sent out questions for you to consider. Hopefully you had time to look at those. But with that, counsel, you may begin.
May it please the court, my name is Dawn Williams and I represent the Department of Child Safety, and I'd like to try to reserve about 2 minutes for rebuttal. We're here because the juvenile court misapplied Rule 315 of the juvenile rules, the rule that requires parties to disclose relevant and non-privileged information to other parties in a dependency matter. And to that end, as you mentioned, the court had posed some questions to the parties, and so I'd like to address them. The first question was, does Arizona law require DCS to possess medical, educational, and other records for a child in its legal care, custody, and control? And as with most things in juvenile law, the answer is it depends. DCS often will have those records, but sometimes not all of them. DCS may have an obligation to have those records if the child is in a licensed foster care placement versus the circumstance here when a child is in an unlicensed relative placement. So there are a lot of variables that come into play. When, like this case, you have a child who is 16 years old when she came into custody, DCS typically will not request her entire lifetime history of school records or medical records, things like that, because it's not relevant to what DCS needs to do in the immediate moment.
What about just records for the time that the child is in care, including like mental health records and medical records?
So the way DCS approaches that is, again, it depends. It depends on what the information is being used for. So for example, if you consider every child in DCS custody receives annual well checks, DCS does not obtain the medical records to support each of those well checks for the thousands of kids that are in custody, because DCS doesn't need the medical records. They just need the update from the pediatrician, and that information is then disclosed to the parties through case notes and court reports. So often DCS gathers information without necessarily gathering the underlying records, because those records, especially medical records that a DCS staffer may not have time or education to review thoroughly, aren't needed for what's happening in the case. The same is true for educational records. So DCS may obtain the last year's educational records to make sure the child's educational needs are being met now. But as the child goes through the education system while they're in DCS custody, DCS may not ask the school to provide every record. The DCS worker will communicate with the child's school to say, hey, how are they doing? Do they have their individualized education plan if they need one? How are their grades? And again, relay that information to the parties through case notes and court reports, but typically doesn't request hard copies or even digital copies of the child's entire school record, because that information, again, isn't necessary for what DCS is trying to do. And that's particularly true in a case like this where family reunification isn't the case plan goal. Here, DCS's focus was on getting this young woman ready to turn 18 and live independently based on the parents' actions and inactions in this case.
Well, in counsel, to that end, the child is going to be turning 18 shortly. How should that, if at all, weigh into our decision on whether or not to accept jurisdiction here?
We would ask the court to accept jurisdiction to clarify the issue, because this is certainly one that's capable of repetition but evading review, because for exactly this reason, that children do come into care late and often right before they turn 18, and so that information is needed. Also, because of the order at issue in this case, the mother specifically requested this information to make decisions about how to act after the child turns 18. So she will still likely want that information. So we need to know from this court whether DCS is obligated to provide additional information other than what already was provided here to satisfy her request.
Counsel, your petition raises a pure legal issue for us. Would you agree?
Yes.
And let me ask, I wanted to engage a little bit. You mentioned this child will turn 18, actually the 24th of next month, if I remember right. What packet of medical, dental, behavioral health, educational information will the child get from DCS? She's been in DCS's care, custody, and control for almost 3 years by then, when she turns 18.
She'll receive a copy of everything that DCS has in its file, but DCS typically, I don't, as far as I know, and that this is, actually, I don't want to speculate because I'm not sure. I don't think DCS typically requests additional records for a minor who's aging out, but again, I think it probably depends on what that minor's particular issues and circumstances are. So for example, you know, DCS has an obligation to make sure they have a copy of their birth certificate and a copy of their Social Security card and things like that that they'll need to go on in life. But most people don't have copies of their entire medical record or their school record when they turn 18. And the same is true for children
and
in DCS
presumably
custody.
It would not be an impediment to child obtaining her
right.
own records
exactly.
When she turns 18.
Exactly.
It may be an impediment to a parent
right.
at that point.
Right.
Counsel, I was taken aback by the assertion in your petition that DCS does not routinely receive or request medical and educational records for children in its care. How does DCS then make informed decisions on appropriate medical and dental and behavioral health and educational services for a child without at least some of those records?
And some of those records DCS does receive routinely from the providers or from the schools, but not the entire record. So DCS will get often verbal updates from school officials or the child's pediatrician, things like that. When it's a run-of-the-mill case, no particular educational needs, no severe medical needs, no serious behavioral health needs, DCS will rely on those updates and, again, provide that to the parties through other means. But
help me understand what you mean by run-of-the-mill, because it seems like there's some complicating factors in this case, including behavioral health issues that
right.
are profound.
Right, and that's true, and that's really the only issue here was behavioral health. The child had no medical conditions that needed to be managed or reviewed in depth. The child had no educational issues that needed to be weighed in depth. So to that end, the child's behavioral health records, because the child did receive on two occasion inpatient psychiatric treatment, those records were provided to DCS and DCS did disclose those. So when DCS receives those records, it does routinely disclose them to the parties, but DCS did not seek additional records, formal paper or digital copies of records, other than communicating with the child's care providers. The child has regular child and family team meetings once a month. And so the child's providers and DCS all come together once a month and talk about what services is the child receiving, how is the child doing, do any changes need to be made, and then that information gets, again, relayed to the parties.
And is that how you know that there were no medical or educational issues of consequence here?
Yes, based on the ongoing court reports that provided that information.
Let me also ask, because DCS provides routine progress reports to the juvenile court, filed or lodged with the court upon which the court relies, relaying things like medical, dental, behavioral health, and developmental needs and services. And then on the educational side, child's needs and services and efforts to ensure the child's educational stability. I'm actually looking at one from your client's appendix, the 23rd of September 2024 report. And it contains several paragraphs that I'm not going to read from that, but where does that information come? I'm wondering, you know, sounds like the child's doing well in school, and I'm delighted always to see that, but the source of that is unknown and not disclosed.
And
where would I find the source for that information?
That's the information that DCS gathers as part of its ongoing social work obligation to the family. So that would have come from the child and family team meetings, possibly outreach to the school that the caseworker did. The caseworker is required to meet with the child herself once a month and meet with the care provider. So all of those, there could be any number of sources for that information that the department would then put in its court report.
Could it be that the only source is the child reporting that they think they're doing well in school? Does DCS not go beyond that? And
that's unlikely, records? I think.
But not impossible.
I suppose not. I think because of the regular child and family team meetings that are required, I think that there would be other input. I can't imagine that a DCS worker wouldn't ask, you know, hey, the child tells me she's getting straight A's. Is that accurate? And someone wouldn't speak up.
Counsel, let me ask, we had included in the order setting forth the issues some regulations that DCS has promulgated that were not raised by the parties in Superior Court or in this court, but it strikes me that those require folks not so much on the educational side, but on the medical, behavioral health, dental side, require them to provide two DCS documents that would be in DCS's possession. Is that how you read those?
In terms of the code provisions, both 21-7-120 and 121, both refer to licensed providers. And in this case, there was no licensed provider. The child was with a non-licensed relative. So that provision, the licensee definition is in R21-7-10144. And that's defined separately from DCS, which is defined at subsection 25. And so it's clear that was anticipated, that there was a separate entity that would be the licensing agency that might obtain and possess those records. That's separate from DCS.
Which is separate from DCS?
The licensee.
Licensee is, but the licensee has certain obligations to DCS,
right,
to provide documents.
They do,
DCS.
But again, here there was no licensee.
Let me ask you again, apart from the facts of this case, if there were, that would be documentation that DCS would be obligated to disclose.
If the licensee had provided it, yes.
Well, licensee has an obligation,
right,
under DCS's own regulations, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, to provide that information to DCS, correct?
Right. And so DCS, had there been a licensed foster home or a licensed group home involved in this case, DCS would have gone to them and said, the mother has requested this information. Why haven't you provided it, got that information, and disclosed it?
And what you're describing is how you understand things work in the world today.
Yes. And
and those licensed providers would not give something directly to mother. They would go through DCS.
They would go through DCS. That's correct. Unless DCS wasn't involved. Some of these licensed providers provide privately sourced foster care. And so if DCS was not a party, obviously the parent would have voluntarily, most likely, utilized that system and they would have some arrangement. I'm not sure what it would be. But in terms of cases where DCS is the custodian of the child, then the licensee would obtain. So in the same way that a parent gets copies of their child when they go to the well check, they get the little paper from the doctor saying, here's all the milestones your child is meeting. The foster parent would receive that and turn it over to DCS.
How about a report card from a school?
Those are typically provided to DCS from foster parents, but again, there is no, when a child's in a non-licensed relative, the regulations are looser because they aren't licensed. They haven't gone through that training and done all of that information about what they need to preserve and disclose to DCS.
Given that the best interest of the child is sort of the North Star of Title VIII of juvenile court, wouldn't that be information DCS would want?
Not necessarily. It really does depend on what the circumstances of the case are. If DCS feels that it has sufficient information from collateral sources, it may not need a 500-page medical record.
I was thinking more a report card.
Yeah, report card, sure. But DCS can get that by simply calling the school and saying, can you read me the child's grades? So there may not be a physical...
Or perhaps could you provide me the report card?
Sure.
And did that didn't happen here?
I don't believe it did, no. I don't remember seeing report cards.
Counsel, you seem to emphasize that an issue here is that mother should have sought these records on her own. but she avowed that either she was told or in some capacity that DCS blocked her from getting these records. Can you speak to that a little bit, kind of what that obligation is and what happened here?
DCS took no action to block her from getting any records. She may have hit a roadblock because maybe one of the providers saw that the child was in DCS custody and therefore wanted to get DCS's permission before releasing that information, but DCS never withheld that permission or that information. And without Mother ever explaining specifically what she did to try to get records or who she was trying to get them from, DCS couldn't answer that. And DCS was concerned too because the mother's request was based solely on her desire to make decisions after the child turned 18. It had nothing to do with the case plan goal here, which was independent living for the child, or even when it was independent living concurrent with a family reunification case plan goal. The mother never asserted she needed these records to help her parent the child.
And
that was never her intention.
I understand that case-specific concern, and the record from my reading of it reflects that concern. But there are ways we're asked to address, is there an obligation? And I think the rules provide ways on a case-by-case way for DCS or others to say no. There are reasons why, even though ordinarily we'd need to disclose this, we don't now. Is that fair?
Right, because the juvenile rules are very different from the civil and family law rules. Both of those contain provisions that require not only disclosure of documents and information in a party's possession, but also information that can be acquired by reasonable inquiry and investigation.
And I understand that. My question was a little different. Your thought was, hey, there may be reasons why, even if your client had these documents and under 315 had an obligation to disclose them, why they should not be disclosed to Mother in this case. And I think there are rules that would allow the trial court to enter orders if the thought was, hey, harm may come when that happens.
Exactly. For example, early in this case, when the father was facing criminal charges, there were certain pieces of information that couldn't be disclosed without potentially jeopardizing the criminal investigation. So DCS will typically wait until that's resolved or the county attorney says it's okay to release this information. But when information would do a substantial material harm to an investigation, DCS can withhold that information.
Can I ask as well, and it's not necessarily directly in front of us, but as I understand, the record suggests that some documents that may have otherwise been privileged to the child were disclosed without redaction. And I read a transcript as an awfully compelling and mature concern that the child expressed to the Superior Court. What happened there, and is that what should have happened?
I have never seen a case where therapy notes like that were released, and so I think that was an error, and I think it probably is attributable to the fact that this disclosure issue came on the heels of a pretty profound disclosure issue that DCS was facing, and a large, large volume of back information. And so I think just everyone was so invested in getting information redacted and sent out quickly, I think redactions were missed here.
Thank you.
And why was there not, why did you not file a petition in 2024 when first ordered to do something? Why now?
Because at this point, the court had entered an ongoing order. So even though the child had expressed her reservations and concern about her parents having access to this information, the court had ordered DCS to continue to provide it until she turned 18.
Didn't you have the same issue? You're saying we don't have these documents. Wasn't that issue there?
It was, and DCS complied with the earlier order in order to avoid a contempt finding, and so there was some concern that issue may have been mooted until the court entered another order requiring ongoing, and that's when DCS sought this court's input.
Quick follow-ups, and I know you wanted 2 minutes rebuttal, but
I'll wing it.
DCS was found in contempt, correct?
The court found that DCS willfully didn't obey the order, but didn't go so far as to hold DCS in contempt.
Okay. I'm not quite sure what the
I'm not either, but there were no sanctions, and so
no, there weren't sanctions for sure, right, other than a supplemental order requiring that disclosure. But even that, the ongoing disclosure obligation was stayed by the Superior Court's order in May, correct?
Right.
And that stay remains in place to this moment?
It does.
Thank you.
Counsel, you contend in your reply that father has waived his 8841G argument, but isn't he just asserting that as an alternate ground to support the Superior Court's order?
It's possible, but even if it wasn't waived, it has no bearing here, because this court has made clear, for example, in the DCS versus Stalking Tate case, that the preliminary protective hearing orders, the dependency adjudication and disposition orders, the orders entered at each dependency review hearing have all subsumed those temporary orders. They're no longer in effect, and so had the court made such an order with the temporary orders, it would no longer be valid anyway.
And your argument is, regardless of 315, that the Superior Court has no authority under statute, rule, regulation to require DCS to obtain possession of documents from service providers of a child in its care, custody, and control, like medical, dental, behavioral health, and education. No authority.
Well, I would say that if the parties elected under Rule 315E to exercise the civil rules, then that may be different. But no party requested that, and the juvenile court didn't order it here.
But no statutory authority absent, and no rule-based authority absent agreement of the parties, that's your position?
That's correct.
Or and is that only in when we're dealing with an unlicensed provider?
Right, and then again, the licensee would hold those records and is obligated to provide them to DCS if they have them.
And we'll probably give you a little bit of rebuttal time since we're asking so many questions. But when you responded to the initial order, did DCS go out and obtain records, or did they just disclose what was in their possession at that point?
At that point, DCS disclosed what was in its possession.
It did not seek.
Not originally, but did later.
And that's what got the court's attention, I
right.
think. Is that fair?
Right. And again, the reason for that was that there was no indication that the mother couldn't get them on her own, and DCS didn't feel
but
that it needed
suggested
them.
That that's not an option for a mother if the child's in a dependency. The mother would have to go through DCS.
Only to get information from a licensee. The mother could get information from the child's school or the child's medical provider, things like that. They would typically, you know, not immediately turn it over. They would check with DCS, is it okay that this parent receives this information in case there's some sort of protective order in place? And absent that, then DCS would say, go ahead and release what you have. The mother would obtain that, and then it would be her duty to disclose it to DCS.
What's your response to mother's argument that, hey, I don't know what's the entire palette of service providers that my child is seeing, DCS does?
I think the initial response would be DCS tried to engage her in services for 3 years and she refused to participate. So she would have had access to all that information had she had any intention of reunifying with her child.
And what's your response after that? You said your initial response.
Then it would be, you know, she could ask DCS, can you give me a list of all the service providers? Most of them are listed in the court reports or in the case notes. So she, through her attorney, had access to that information.
And where in the court report that I mentioned, and it's fair that you may not have that in front of you, but where would I find the service provider listing?
Do you happen to have the appendix page number?
It's 55.
Okay.
I see a reference to a high school by name. But that's it.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be listed in that. I would anticipate that the specific provider information is in the case notes.
And is DCS these days and in this era producing those case notes
yes,
to parents?
With metadata.
Okay. Yeah, I understand the metadata issue, but...
Sorry, it's still a little painful.
No, I get that. But I think there was a time when even that wasn't happening. Is that fair?
That's correct, in some cases, okay. Yeah.
Thank you. We may give you a minute or two. Like to have some rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel.
May it please the court, Seth Draper for Father Jason W. Your Honor, this case really does just illustrate why we need a clear rule about DCS's obligation to obtain these documents and do it. There is a constellation of rules, regulations, and statutes that show how we can carrot and stick compel DCS to do this, some which weren't invited. I do want to note that Father's initial response in answering to the petition for special action was the record was not fully developed, correct? It was not really developed behind there. And some of that is because DCS was initially providing documents, did initially go out and get it. So, you know, from a counsel and parent's perspective, it is, well, why keep fighting this out? So one of the things that I do want to address and clarify here is that parents do have a significant hurdle in obtaining these documents on themselves. So we included a hyperlink to what's called a notice to provider. We do not have the actual one issued in this case. It is our belief that there was one issued in this case. And what it does is it alerts people who contain and sensitive information about children or work with children that this child is now in the custody of DCS and they should no longer be communicating or providing documents to DCS without further clarification. We believe that is why when mother attempted to obtain these documents on her own, she was rebuffed.
Counsel, let me ask, and I appreciate that clarification. Now, as an appellate court, we are usually constrained to the record provided to us. And we have perhaps meandered in this order in advance of today's hearing about issues to address, even beyond that. But we don't, as you mentioned, we don't know that that alert was provided in this case, or at least we have nothing in the record showing it was. Is that fair?
We don't have, I wouldn't say definitive proof. Fair. We have mother's statements that she went to providers and that she was rebuffed.
And I want to engage you a little bit on that. That was mother, a separate party. You don't represent her. You
Correct.
Have provided us a response, and I appreciate the response. It didn't seem to me that you were, that your client, I should say, was a particularly active participant in this undertaking. I think he expressed support for mother's requests that resulted in this order. Is that fair? Or am I misreading the record?
No, that is correct. They're a unit. And again, families can internally decide how they want to distribute case and requests and the works. And father's always supported it. So when this was filed, yes, our contact with father was he wanted these released for the reasons stated therein.
And I understand. And I appreciate that. And what we have on potential frustration in mother's ability to secure these documents is not a subpoena with an objection or a request for issuance of subpoena or a request for a third party court order. Instead, we have an avowal by counsel at a hearing, not evidentiary, saying, hey, we sort of tried this and we're unsuccessful.
And I would agree. And again, I think the bizarre history of this case, and it is interesting, you know, someone does that. I think up until April of 2024, parents were receiving documents. When they initially did highlighted, we are no longer receiving documents in about September of 2024, I believe the assistant attorney general on the record said they did have a right to the documents, but maybe these should be filed in a way to protect the child's best interest. It was just an open-ended question. Mm-hmm. Later, we saw that DCS said we have finished complying with this. That's when the order to show cause was filed. They went. They continued to object, but despite objecting, they then did disclose the documents. So it's just a weird case of why would father go and subpoena documents when DCS was actually obtaining them?
Well, and I appreciate that, although to DCS's credit, they were at least for some period of that time under court order obligation to do that, right? I mean, it wasn't that they had options. They had to comply with that or face potential contempt. Fair?
Correct.
And then It does sound, at least the flavor I get from this, is there was a policy change within DCS as to what it was or was not going to do. And I don't know if that's communicated in Superior Court proceedings, but at least in that hearing, it strikes me that the Assistant Attorney General who covered that hearing, who is not here arguing today, either said that or came pretty close to saying that it was a change in policy.
And I understand what your Honor is saying, and that's where you run into some difficulties in how do we interpret these, because I think it's a rather unique situation where normally we've had these ongoing disclosure issues, and I think most courts and parties are, DCS has it, they're just waiting for the redaction to send it out. I don't know that we've encountered before or anticipated encountering before just DCS stating we have no obligation to obtain documents about this child in our care.
Counsel, I don't see in your response that you addressed the jurisdiction, kind of our threshold jurisdiction question, although you did go into the merits. So what is your position on whether or not we should accept special action jurisdiction here?
At this point, I would ask to supplement and say that I would actually ask the court to take jurisdiction. I think that now if we were to decline and try to do a remand, we would not be able to get a hearing to accomplish what we wanted, you know, which is why Father was asking that, you know, the jurisdiction should be declined and remanded for further proceedings because it just wasn't fully developed. There are other mechanisms that Father could pursue. You know, I highlighted 8-841G just because I think that it's a very clear one. There's a general contempt one, but that gets a little confusing where I think you'd have to shoestring. There's also just declaratory relief, which we have used in juvenile proceedings as well. That's under ARS 12-1831. And following, and we've used that before to get through here. So I do think that there are powers and authorities under the court to reach this conclusion. It just wasn't developed. And again, I do think that sitting back, it was DCS was complying, so no one sought to develop that record further, and that was our initial one. But at this point, with the child turning 18, I do think we do need to ask the court to accept jurisdiction and make clear that DCS does need to provide those documents, because otherwise, by the time the mandate issues and returns and the court can issue a decision, it will be too late, is my fear.
Could I ask, counsel for DCS was explaining that they typically rely on the case reports and don't necessarily have underlying documents. Are you suggesting that there's an obligation on their part to always have those, even if there's just a case report, or are you suggesting that they just have to obtain them if there's a request from a parent?
I think their obligation is they have to evaluate whether it's reasonable care of the child. Do they have to go scorched earth and find every single document that indicates this child? I'm not going to go as far as say that. I do think that you can see even in the record there was discussion about ASFAs, and there was objection to ASFAs because they weren't obtaining the documents. The trial court, I believe in this case, did grant ASFA every single time. I do think that that is a carrot and stick motivating factor as well in the trial court level that unfortunately was not utilized in this aspect. But I do think, like, the large structure shows, it's very clear that any licensed care needs to be obtaining these documents providing to DCS. I think statute also shows under 8-503, DCS has a statutory obligation to be supervising and ensuring that they're complying with it, so they have to be making sure that they are providing those documents. Regarding the medical director or medical providers and behavioral health providers under 8-514.05, we do have powers and jurisdiction to bring them in to ask questions about the services they're providing children. That's under ARS 8-248. So again, another mechanism that we could use to bring it in. I think you can show that there is there, but I do think the general thrust is DCS is obligated to get these documents to make sure that they're reasonably caring for the child.
I guess I'm not understanding though. They're suggesting that they can reasonably care for the child based on verbal reports that they get, whether it's from the school or from a medical provider, and if there's no suggestion that there's an issue, do you want to, or should we issue an opinion that says no, they can't just rely on a verbal suggestion that things are okay? They have to go and obtain every underlying record.
I would think that that is the rule that we do need, and as highlighted by this. The trust but verify, I think, is a phrase we often hear. Because without doing that, what you're running into, especially with an unlicensed placement, as in this one, is we don't know. And the record is bereft of, is there anything here? And again, I can appreciate sometimes where these cases on the trial level play out differently, and they can be more, feel more nuanced in how they're moving. But then we reach a point where there is no longer a spirit of cooperation on it. And when people are sitting back, this rule comes into play, and these parents are missing out on this critical information in critical time. I know DCS is concerned because mom is talking about how she wants to interact with the child after she turns 18, but legally the case plan is this child's not coming back to her under 18, right? And after the child is 18, it will still be her child, and it will still be father's child, and they want to figure out how to continue to work as a family unit with her. So I do think, again, that this serves the best interest of the child. I'm hesitant to say that DCS has an obligation to obtain every single document, because my concern is that is such a hefty thing, especially for parents who might move or from be out of state. How do you say that they have to be getting that? Do they at least need to be getting documents while they're under their care? I think that is a general thrust of what the statutes and regulations provide. I do think, though, as counsel stated, and I would agree, the legislature did not want to put that punishment on non-licensed foster care, right?
Go ahead and finish your thought.
I was going to say, they're already doing such a great sacrifice in taking care of these people. They may be unsophisticated parties. They don't need to be punished. We do see that there are real punishments, including revocation of license, fines, investigations for the license providers who are not complying with this that DCS should be enforcing when they don't. But I don't think that we need to have those penalties against unlicensed foster families.
Counsel, the records show that mother did not engage in any reunification services that DCS provided. Did father engage in any reunification services?
I don't recall off the top of my head, Your Honor.
And please clarify for me, had father engaged and had parents engaged in reunification services, would they have been permitted to attend any appointments with child?
You could speculate, maybe, who knows? It depends on what the services say. Oftentimes when you're dealing with children who do not want to return to parents, I mean, that is ultimately it, right? If parents want to reunify and a child doesn't, it doesn't matter what the parents do or don't do sometimes. I say sometimes. There are some things that can happen. I can't read the mind of a child of what services she would have wanted to see her parents complete or what reports she could hear from DCS that would make her change her mind. But I would also say, I don't think the barrier for being informed about your child, who legally is still your child, is whether you're participating in services.
And just so I'm clear, you are unclear whether father engaged in any reunification services.
I do not recall off the top of my head, and I don't have my whole case file in front of me. My apologies, Your Honor.
Counsel, I wanted to ask, and just as a transition, you mentioned interaction between parents and EW after EW turns 18. That would be, among other things, EW's decision too, right? If she wanted no contact with parents, that's her complete right as an adult.
Absolutely.
The question, and I appreciate that, the transition, let me ask, I want to understand the basis for your argument that DCS has an obligation to gather documents in these sort of, I'll call them two buckets, educational and then medical, dental, behavioral health, because they, in my mind, seem to fall in kind of two categories. I don't know, but I want to understand. It seems to me that either there's an obligation or some combination of these by rule, statute, regulation, or something else. And I don't read your brief as arguing that this is that to gather these documents, not to disclose them if you have them, but to gather them, that you're relying on the rules. Do I read that right, that you're more on the statutory front?
I was more on the statutory front, and that is what I did say, is I do think that a plain reading of Rule 315A does not obligate that. Similarly, a parent who has a child in their custody, like in an in-home dependency, I don't think has an affirmative obligation to be going out and getting whatever document related. Certainly if it's requested, they should. I think the court has authority to compel them to do so. But you know, that is where you run in. I don't think just the plain reading of Rule 315 does so. I would agree that the application of that rule alone is not there.
And we've heard some, well, and I don't see another juvenile court rule that would drive that bus, but help me out if you see another one that I just can't.
Other than, again, our one rule, I think 103, pointing to best interest of the child is the North Star. And I think sure. It's hard to say that not obtaining documents is ever in the best interest of the child, right? I think that there was even a brief by the Department of Child Safety that parents who refuse to engage in services and get documents about them, they could be guilty of abandoning or neglecting their child and have their rights severed. So it's hard to say that when that is our case law that DCS is furthering the best interest of the child. But again, I don't know that that creates a procedural or guiding right to it, which is why I was referencing that there are other statutory mechanisms. I did not brief the ones that I thought really would require notice because I think it is just much too far. I think 8-841G does provide some guidance for it. I know it has been utilized in other cases, such as when we were having a Mind 24/7 issue back in the day, and there's discussion about, you know, when is that an inpatient? Do people need to be notified?
Right.
And courts were using 8-841 to say, you just need to let us know on an ongoing basis, and DCS was complying. It resolved the issue. I do think courts have that power to do that, and they continue to go until they release them from that obligation.
And I don't – this is helpful to me. Thank you. I don't see you relying on the regulations that we had sort of – the Code of Arizona Administrative Code provisions that we had sort of mentioned as well. Is that fair?
I would say that's fair because I think that the consequence there is generally that these places should lose their license and should no longer care for children, right? Like, that is the anticipated consequence the legislature put in. I do think that DCS is obligated under statute under 8-503 to be insuring. But again, also in this specific case, we weren't dealing with a licensed provider. So I did not go to.
So in my four-part world, leaves us with statutory obligation or something else that I haven't thought of. Is your argument based solely on statutory obligations that DCS has?
I would say that is the only thing I can find that would obligate them to do that. I don't think it's clear. I think it was the anticipated intent. I will be honest, I don't think that it is spelled out clearly, which is why we're here, right? If there was a clear rule, we all would be able to cite to it. I think it was clearly the intent. I think that they put in, they carried in sticks for the sophisticated parties, and just similarly didn't anticipate that we would get a position of we're just not going to obtain documents for a child.
Thank you.
I did want to highlight that, as I mentioned on earlier, I do think that there is something that could come out of this court ruling, and that is guidance and why this should be taken under jurisdiction for guidance, that trial courts can also deny ASFAs. And I do think that this is probably one of the stronger arguments, that this is just not reasonable care of a child when we're not getting any documents to verify.
Counsel, let me ask you about that, because the reasonable efforts ASFA findings way back when I sat on that bench, those were on occasion awfully important. But your argument, it seems to me, either would require the court to recognize a requirement that DCS go out and get these, or would say, hey, even if that requirement doesn't exist, a court could decline making the ASFA findings if DCS didn't do that, even though that's not statutorily required. Does that help me on the latter part of that for ASFA findings?
Right. So again, under interpreting case law, we're interpreting what is reasonable care of a child. If I have a child in my custody and I never talk to their medical providers, or if I talk to them but I never ask for documents and I just say, hey, this person who saw my child, how are they doing? They're doing great, great. And I never talk to anyone and follow up on that, I don't think that's reasonable. And I think that is guidance that the court could provide to the Superior Court.
There are no circumstances under which it would be reasonable if the medical provider said zero problems. You still want to see the underlying records.
I'm not going to say zero, and that is something that I said at the beginning, that I hesitated to say that they always have to. And again, also recognizing the Department of Child Safety is statewide, and there's a lot of rural counties that operate differently. I myself am from Gila County. My sister still works up there. I understand that it works differently, and that's what I'm saying, though, but is it reasonable? And then that is something that courts should be looking at and evaluating, because you have here on a trial court a bizarre outcome where DCS apparently was held in contempt, though not sanctioned, but ASFA was still signed. And so I'm not sure how we're saying that they're not meeting their obligation, but they're still providing reasonable care for a child. To me, that does not seem that should be allowed to be permitted to stand. And I think taking jurisdiction of this matter to clarify, like, if these are the issues we're seeing, this is not reasonable. If we are concerned it is not reasonable, this is the power that the courts have to enforce it.
And I understand that point, and it does seem like there's a little friction, but the petition challenges the underlying obligation to do that. Not the ASFA finding, but hey, the department should not have been required to do that. And if that went away, the ASFA finding would be sort of untouchable on that ground.
I would disagree. I think DCS petitioned saying that the court did not have basis under Rule 315 to compel them to obtain documents. I do agree with that. I disagree that even if we don't say Rule 315 has there, that there is no evaluation or inspection or inquiry of what reasonable efforts and reasonable care of the child is. And that's where I think we can have the guidance. Because these are courts who are interpreting statutes, that is what we are here to do, is to provide them guidance on how to do that. And that if courts feel that their lack of documents is unreasonable, that is. And those are for trial courts, right? Because these are complicated. Even now, what we have is an unclear record that's not developed before us, and that's why we're somewhat here. And that is, again, why Father did ask to go back and redo these proceedings a little bit just to flesh out the record. And that is my time, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Williams, if you'd like to have 2 minutes, could you set it for 2 minutes?
Thank you very much, Your Honor. To address that last point first, the ASPA findings are findings that reasonable efforts have been made to effectuate the permanent goal in place for the child. Since April of 2024, that was independent living. So to the extent that the request for the records was not in furtherance of that goal, it had no bearing on the ASPA findings. So I wanted to make that clear.
Counsel, let me, and I try to leave people alone on rebuttal because time goes so fast, but what if, and this is a hypothetical, okay, independent living for 3 years, ASPA findings, your DCS did nothing, didn't follow up anywhere on medical care or other, let's just focus on medical care. Are you saying that if the court in that hypothetical, which is not this case, said, you know, I don't think ASPA findings are appropriate here, that would be error? In other words, that's consistent with independent living. It's just not consistent maybe with the best interests of the child to not give medical care for 3 years.
Right. I think the court would, because part of ensuring that the child is prepared for independent living ensures that the child is healthy.
Right.
So I think to that end, the court could make that reasonable efforts
Thank
finding.
You.
The other thing I wanted to raise is that the standard here isn't whether the records are necessary for reasonable care of the child, it's whether they're relevant. And the definition of relevance includes not only that it's more makes a fact more likely true than not, but also that it is necessary to adjudicate a fact at issue. And again, these records were not necessary to adjudicate any fact at issue here for this particular child.
What authority is that based on,
that
definition
is,
of relevance?
Evidence Rule 401.
Which talks about what's admissible in an evidentiary hearing, not about proper care for a child in DCS's legal care, custody, or control.
Sure. But again, if this court were to enter an order that would mandate that DCS obtain all records for every child in its care from the date of removal until the date the dependency ends, that would be an enormous burden for DCS, not just to obtain those records, but then to disclose them with all the redactions that are necessary. When most of the time, like I said, DCS can obtain the information it needs from various service providers without getting documents to support that information.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel for your your preparation and your excellent argument. We will take this matter under advisement and issue a decision in due course. Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.